America weekend.
You better call me later on. By sundown.
By sundown? What are you, Gary Cooper? By sundown?
That's funny. You know, I'm trying not to laugh, but that's funny.
Okay.
You better call me by sundown.
Welcome back to America Weekend. I'm Ed Kalenge. Comedy Central considers my next guest one of the top 50 stand-up comedians of all time. GQ called him one of the 20th century's most influential humorists, and it sure as hell ups my street cred to have him on the show. It is a pleasure to welcome someone I have wanted to have on since the first minute I've had this show, Richard Lewis.
Ed, it's about time. You know, it's America Weekend, and, you know, I need you more than you need me.
I don't think so.
I do. You're syndicated. You're a big shot. I'm just an old man with bad posture.
Wow.
Been doing this for 45 years and is a recovering drug addict.
Wow.
I need you, Ed.
Well, you know, that warms my heart, my friend. What a way to start an interview. I mean, that is just, I couldn't ask for a better way.
Are we done yet?
No, I guess no.
Oh,
I guess not.
We
covered a lot in that 38 seconds, but you know. All right, you got this new book out right now. It's available May 5th.
Let's get this over with you. You have a lot of fans all over the country. Look, I don't like plugging, but I've been doing this 45 years.
Right.
I've always wanted. I always had a notion, you know, with my kind of comedy, that I've been loved by much fewer people than people that tried to undermine me.
Right.
So I had this thought to write these dark thoughts, and actually Edgar Allan Poe, I don't mean to sound grandiose, he did a book like this with this famous French impressionist, Edouard Manet, and he wrote a poem, and then Manet would, on the other page, illustrate it. So I didn't know this until after the fact, but it doesn't matter. So I wrote these thoughts, and then this brilliant New York artist called Pitolo did the illustrations, and it's really basically a great, it's not much reading. Larry David wrote a foreword, which is so amazing to me. In fact, even to Vanity Fair, they even printed it. It's out on the stands now. They printed the foreword.
Really?
And it's really cool. Larry destroys me in the foreword. he just destroys. My wife says, I'll read the foreword.
And that's it.
Like a parakeet. He destroys me except for one sentence. He's very loving. But the rest of it is like I'm a mental case to him. And like he is to me. But anyway, the book is really, it's very sweet and funny and dark. And the other thing is I just landed a 2-year series, at least with Sir Patrick Stewart on Stars, called Blunt Talk, which starts in the summer. And I'll tell you something, man. I did know Sir Patrick in that Mel Brooks movie, Robin Hood, Men in Tights. He played my brother. But we only spoke briefly, but he's a Shakespearean trained actor, and there's an amazing cast, and he plays this drug addicted, cocaine, every you name the drug, bad father, bad everything, and he's a newscaster, and he has his managers and his butlers and all this stuff, and I play the network psychiatrist of all people.
Wow.
I know, when I went in, I said, you know, it was hard for me. I didn't want to say, like, you want me as a psychiatrist. I tried, otherwise I could have blown it, so I went in there. I read it, and then I found out that they said, no, we were praying that you would do well because there was no one else on the planet that could play a psychiatrist with as much experience. I'm a fan of good television.
Right.
I mean, I'm not boasting about it because I'm in it. Like, there's so many great TV shows on, you know, from Mad Men and Breaking Bad. You know, so I hope this is right up there. If not, so be it. But I've read all the scripts, and boy, it's pretty cool.
And they've picked it up for 2 years, so that tells you right there
expect
a lot out of it. So that's pretty cool. So very nice.
Yeah.
Let's get the name of the book out there, so when people want to pick it up, it's called Reflections from Hell: Richard Lewis's Guide to How Not to Live.
Yeah, you got to look at this and realize that if you go the other way, you'd be much better off.
Oh, okay. So this is, you come to a fork in the road, go the way you don't want to go, and that's where you need to be.
This shows you how not to live.
Oh, I see. Okay. How not to live.
When you look at it, you go, this is how Richard Lewis lived. I'm going to do the other way.
Wow.
And then you're going to have a much happier life. If you give it to people you despise, they'll say, this is how you lived, you moron.
Wow. So you can really use this in so many different ways. I like that. That's very good.
Oh, no. It's complete. It's It's for people you hate, and it's for people you love. I mean, who else is left?
I got to tell you, I saw a preview of it, and the artwork is amazing. I mean, Carl does some great stuff.
The guy's a genius.
I mean, he is. And you match up your humor with his artwork. I mean, I saw one, the best sparring partner I can have is myself, and the artwork is you punching yourself, and you're both Rock'em Sock'em robots. But the illustrations are great. I mean, and you guys amplify each other, and you both seem to get each other really well.
Well, you know, you're really right on the money. I know him for 35 years. He's been a great friend of mine, and he's a legendary professor at the School of Visual Arts in New York. And I've always mentioned him, but I always wanted to have something that had me and him collaborate, and this was it. And he knows my head inside and out, and I think it's funny and unusual and authentic, so we'll see what happens.
You know, one of the things I've always enjoyed about you is how you're willing to look inside yourself for material instead of just looking around at the world around you. How difficult is that to do? I mean, you've been in it 40 years now, but when you made that decision that you yourself was going to be the basis of a lot of your material, how difficult was that at first to explore and actually do?
Well, listen, there's been some great observational comedians, but I was, frankly, my father died before I was a performer. My sister eloped when I was 12. My brother was already out of the house. My mother had a lot of problems, and poor thing. So I had really no family,
right,
really, to speak of. So and when I got on stage, I felt so lost, and I said the only way I could feel validated would be to talk about how miserable I feel, and if I got laughs, then I knew that I was not crazy, but that I was, that other people felt the same way. And so I like to unravel the onion when I'm on stage. I have no idea what I'm going to say when I go on stage. I have thousands of hours of material on my computer, and I look at it, but, you know, with about, you know, maybe 2, 3, 4 hours of new material, but I can hardly remember it. And but I didn't want to, I never wanted to judge, say, hey, do you ever notice when you go to a store? That kind of humor is good for people, and they laugh.
But that's not for you.
There's nothing wrong with it.
Right.
But that would have been meaningless for me. That would have been what happened to me. I was always judged and told. So I'd rather just say, here's how I feel. That's more important. And it is a thin line between narcissism and comedy. Mm-hmm. But if people couldn't laugh at how I was feeling, then I just would have quit. Apparently, for 45 years, they're still,
Sure.
still hanging in. So I'm grateful.
And it's the most honest, it's the most raw, and it's the most cathartic comedy there is. I mean, and for you, you're coming up on 20 years in your sobriety. Did that change your comedy at all ever since 1994?
Well, I made a joke in my old book I wrote, The Other Great Depression. I said, I have so much clarity now, I despise myself even more. And it was a good little line. But, I mean, the truth of the matter is, when I was doing well, I was a functioning alcoholic. And I don't like that phrase because there was a lot of things I could have done, which I didn't.
Right.
Because my life was out of control. But I managed to pull off series and concerts and big shows and do it without being hammered, but that didn't make me a good guy. It just made me lucky, you know. But when I finally got sober, I was clear-headed enough to realize that I wasn't just the victim. I was always, that's where I came up with Things from Hell. I was always mm-hmm. blaming everybody. And I still do to some degree, but I also realize that I have a part in the equation too. So it's made me even have twice as much material, because it's like not only was my mother or my girlfriend from hell, and look, my mother tried, but I don't like saying that about my mom. But the truth is, she had problems. But rather than say mother from hell or girlfriend from hell, I can say I was a boyfriend and a son from hell, and it's and I have a whole load of material about myself, because I was, I was no cool guy either. So it just made it made it easier for me to put myself down on stage, which I like.
And you're the guy that actually invented the phrase "whatever from hell," right? That comes from you.
Yeah, no, it's in the Yale Book of Quotations.
See?
And it's funny because I was trying to. I've been doing it since the early '70s. And I remember doing it on Letterman all the time.
Right.
And David would stop me and say, I know, you came from a party from hell. And he would laugh and everything. And I did popularize the phrase. And so
you
I
did,
remember
yeah.
trying to get it, have my lawyer try to get it into Bartlett's. And this guy says, the editor says, no, it wasn't Richard. I said, well, what do you mean it wasn't Richard? I've been doing it for 30 years, and it was never popularized before that. And he says, well, my nieces just came back from college, and they said they had a semester from hell. I went, no,
oh, please.
Kidding.
You know.
Yeah, that's what I said. Oh, please. Well, probably watching Letterman.
Exactly. That's where they got it from. You know, one other quick question I got to ask you. You and I are both Knicks.
Sure.
You and I are both New York Knicks fans. What a mess.
Hello.
When does Phil Jackson say, you know what, I don't need this. He grabs the Geritol and just goes back to Malibu. When does that happen?
I don't know. You know something? I don't know Phil, and he doesn't need money. I don't know what in the world he was thinking.
Yep.
It might have been a personal thing. It couldn't have been, I want to end my career where I started and won two championships as a Knicks player.
Right.
He decimated the team. I don't have the answer. I'm just distraught
about
it, and it's going to take forever to rebuild that team.
I know. All right, well, once again, the new book is Reflections from Hell, Richard Lewis's Guide to How Not to Live. It's available beginning May 5th. Richard Lewis, this has been a pleasure. It's been great. Thank you so much for joining us here.
No, thank
on
you.
American.
I appreciate it very much, and you have a great weekend.
You too. Take care.
All right, buddy.
I'm Ed Kalenge, and this is America Weekend from the Envision Radio Network.
America Weekend.
Individuals and businesses with tax problems, listen carefully. Do you feel like you're losing control of your finances? If you owe over $10,000 in back taxes or have unfiled tax returns, we can help you take back control. The IRS is the largest and most aggressive collection agency in the world, and they can seize your bank accounts, garnish your paycheck, close your business, and file criminal charges. Take control of your tax problem now by calling the experts at U.S. Tax Shield and take advantage of the Fresh Start program and new laws that may allow us to negotiate a settlement for the lowest amount possible. Our team of tax attorneys and enrolled agents can stop collections and get you protected so you can take control of your financial future. U.S. Tax Shield offers a price protection guaranteed quote to get you protected today. U.S. Tax Shield is A-plus rated with the Better Business Bureau, so call now. 800-289-1668. That's 800-289-1668. U.S. Tax Shield. 800-289-1668.